Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Pa'lante. Pa'lante.
Hola mi gente, welcome to Siempre Pa'lante, Always Forward. I'm your host, Gerardo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, family origins from our guests begin in Mexico and lead to the U.S. His familia instilled in him discipline, work ethic, and the power of education. His love for the game of baseball has made a positive impact through coaching on and off the field. He's not afraid to roll up his sleeves and put in the work. He leads a team responsible for the most popular video simulation game on the market exclusively for Major League Baseball. Please welcome Director of Product Development for MLB The Show, Jason Villa. For the millions of listeners out there, for people around the world, who is Jason Villa?
Oh man, that's a loaded question for anyone. I'll start by saying something funny and I'll dig into that later, but I'll say a human first and foremost. And there's family stories about why I say human. We'll get into it. We talk about familia a little bit more. But I guess I'll also begin with some of the cliche. I'm a father. I'm a son. I'm a brother, a friend. I see myself as a hard worker. At the end of the day, individual who doesn't take things too seriously, tries not to let things get too big, and takes every day and handles business, hopefully, and progresses and continues to make stuff around me and people around me a little better and continues to grow as an individual and always learning. That's hopefully me in a nutshell, that as others see me, but that's how I see myself.
See, that was the very humble response. Couldn't ask for a better one, but you know I'm going to dig a little bit more because ahora vamos a cocinar un poco. We're going to go in the kitchen, peel back that onion, get those ingredients in there. You do a lot in your line of business work. I should say your profession. You work for MLB The Show. There's a lot that entails that. So if you can share a little bit about what you do and a little bit about that journey.
Absolutely. This could be a podcast in itself, probably for anyone and their job and how they got there. But I'll just say, like most people that find their way in something they really love and do for a very long time, it happened really by virtue of people and the connections I made. I'll say I started as a QA tester. And I say that with pride and importance because it speaks to what anyone can do, starting in an entry-level position and proving their worth, grinding, remaining focused, and not letting adversity and or challenges or any task get too big for them to overcome. And so started in QA back in 1999, and I was still going to school, graduated from Cal State San Marcos a couple years later. But while I was at school there at Cal State San Marcos here in San Diego, I met an individual who opened up the door to me here to PlayStation, Richard Marquez, who, as things go at PlayStation, is still working here and is still the director of quality assurance and probably senior director now, who I see regularly. And he was an older individual, is an older individual. He had gone to military, came back to school. And so our age gap was there, but a light mentor of sorts and told me, hey, you ever want to come work in the summer and test some video games? And I said, video games? I said, sure, I'll put a controller in my hand and get paid for it. Let's go do that. And so while I was going to business school, did that for a summer, went back. That first summer, I'll just say it was quite an intense summer. And it speaks to the work ethic that my parents instilled in me. But I was still working at the Office of Admissions as a student assistant. I was going to school in the summer because I wanted to get through fast because I'm impatient and I wanted to do everything early. I started everything early in life, good, bad, and other. But I was doing both jobs, QA, student assistant, and still trying to get credits to get through college a bit faster. And so my schedule during that summer was pretty intense. I was spending a few hours in the office at Cal State San Marcos. I was working on some homework. I would go work the night shift in QA. And night shift was 5 to 2 a.m. 5 to 2 a.m. with the chance of working a couple extra overtime hours. So there were nights where I was had a few hours, woke up like a mole getting out of bed and went back to do student assistant work and try to work through some homework. But that was my first summer. And I grinded like that intentionally. And I wouldn't put it on anyone or ask myself to do it again. But I think it was intentional, it was important. Finished school, went back to work at PlayStation full time. I was in QA for a few more years doing project coordination, working with studios. And at that point, around 2003, I had a meeting with Chris Cutliff, my current studio head, and said, hey, I want you to come interview for this production job. And from 2004 till now, kind of worked my way up from an associate producer to now director in the studio. And 23 years later, here's what I'm doing. And as most things, you know, it's not just me. It's a small army of people that we've assembled. When I started in the team, we had about 45, 50 people on this MLB The Show development team. We have now grown to over 200 over the last 20 years. Not only have we grown in the traditional discipline, meaning programming, engineering, art, and design, video game studios now are kind of one-stop shops that have their own arms of marketing. We do social media. We do community service. We have our own internal mini QA aside from our external QA. And what I really love about what I do and what I was able to get into is it merges all the things that I have interest in and passion about. We've got business. We've got video games. We've got technology. And we've got baseball. And we've got sports. And frankly, for my money, there's no better sport in the world. I teach my kids it. I teach other kids it. I did the math the other day. I think I've coached somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 16 teams through my kids' little leagues and all-stars and whatnot. I'll never be the manager, too much paperwork, but I will always be the coach. And I love it. It's so many life lessons, and it is cliche to say, but there's so much that sports in general brings to youth and individuals as they get older that you carry on, from dealing with interpersonal stuff to challenging yourself to learning something to handling adversity to handling success with humility to handling failures with grace. And so that's why I continue to do what I do. I would be remiss if I didn't say the people I work with, and frankly, my boss's boss has given us the confidence and ability to kind of do what we want here at San Diego Studios. And there's been no reason for me to look elsewhere. Offers aside and people saying, you could do this. There's so much of what I enjoy and the people I do it with here in San Diego and MLB The Show that there's been no reason to look elsewhere.
That's amazing. What are some of the things about your job that you really enjoy most? And it's, I don't feel it's a job with you. Like the conversations I have with you, you really love your job. The saying, right? We've heard the saying, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I feel, yeah, we have our moments, but you still love what you do. So tell me a little bit about some of those highlights. What do you enjoy most about it?
It's funny because you tell people where you work and what you do, and the first response, oh, you play video games all day. And back when I was in QA, kind of like that, but it wasn't that fun. Playing the same video game for 60 days in a row, not that great, right? You want to play it because you want to, not because you need to. But you're right. Work for myself in general, I really, for right or wrong, hang my hat on the successes, right? And the accomplishments. And when you're done, you're getting through it. And it's, for me at least, you're not always thinking about the steps and the progress. You're just, you've got the end goal in mind. And for better or worse, you know, my parents have always instilled me, never let anything get too big, keep things in balance. And for me, the things that I stand out to me through my work journey, and I really take pride in, and I'll start earlier and then to where we're at now, early on, being able to use work as a place to meet players, frankly. And that was the first little tidbit of opportunity that MLB The Show and PlayStation and San Diego Studios presented was, holy, I met Tony Gwynn, you know, before he passed. I was able to meet and hung out more than once with Ken Griffey Jr., Aaron Judge, and his parents. You learn a lot about an individual from the parents. Parents were the nicest people in the world and very humble. And you could see that from Judge on field, off the field, and Jazz and all that. So that's one thing that's easily looked at as a benefit, but really something you don't feel now. But I think I'll look back, you know, down the road and be like, I got to meet a whole lot of really important impact players throughout baseball. So that's one thing. And in terms of work accomplishments, a few years back, we were presented with the opportunity and task to expand beyond PlayStation. And how are we going to put this game on Xbox and Nintendo? And for me, I was integral to that because of my position at the time, you know, director of production. Not to say I did it on my own by any means. It takes an army, like I said. But we looked at that task and said, we get 2 years to figure this out. How are we going to do this? We've been making this game for PlayStation for 15 plus years. We've got to go put this on a whole new platform, whole new set of tools, whole new set of relationships with individuals we haven't worked in. Oh, and by the way, they're our biggest competitor as an entity. And so we had to navigate all these interesting, integral interceptions of how far can we go? What can we ask? What can we not ask? What can we say? What can we not say? And for me, that first year in 21, not to mention we had Mr. Tatis on the cover for Only the Show 21, which was the first Padre we've ever had in the cover. So I loved as a Padres fan. We figured that out and we released Xbox on 21, doubled our user base, had a whole new level of national notoriety because we weren't just on PlayStation, right? And we were expanding. That was a really, really important day for us as a studio myself. Now, we were able to figure this out in such a short amount of time. And that accomplishment is something I'll look back on. And then the following year, moving over to Nintendo Switch, those couple of things. We had the Xbox experience to get us to Switch, but it was still a whole new ball of wax. Those two things are what come to mind first. And then lastly, I'll talk about our integration with the new release and storylines. For us, over the last couple of years, I will say we've been starting to make really conscious decisions about doing intentional, what we call impactful and powerful work that was meaningful. It's not just games, but we're educating, we're informing, we're bringing up past where I think these storylines are going to offer life lessons to kids in a way that they don't know. Again, we were just talking about this last night. We had a small little celebration with the creative team that created these videos on the creative side in San Diego Studio. And everyone has a very similar reaction, which is first, they're taken back emotionally when they start seeing this. You're doing this in a video game? How did you pull this off? But we're doing it in a way where we're seeping in a whole lot of education and information in an entertaining medium that folks 70 to 7 are going to learn from this. And I say 70 because an individual last night was talking about his mentor, who happens to be a Black man that he was talking to and has known for 10 years. He's key on the creative of the videos. And he'd been meaning to share this, but couldn't, and finally did. And he's asking him for a PlayStation so he could go play this at 70 years old. So I don't care. Teach me how to use this controller. That's fine. He's like, but I want to see this. I want to experience this myself just based on the marketing tidbits we've released so far. And so that first season one video was the first thing I kind of shared with my mom and family. Because we do put assets out all the time. And here's a new cover. Don't get me wrong. Those are important. And a lot of work goes into that. But this was on a different level. And I sent it to my mom and I said, hey, here's the first stream. It's an hour long. Don't worry about seeing the whole thing. I just want you to get a taste of what we're doing because I'm really proud about it. And she watches the whole thing as moms do. I've got the best mom in the world, just like you do. And she sends me a text back and she's like, sweetheart, this is fantastic. I'm so proud of you. A whole message to me. And it was just, that's the level of work I'm most proud of that we're encroaching on here and continuing to do. We're not just making knee-jerk reactions. We're adding, don't get me wrong, we're making money and adding cars and doing all that, but we're doing this stuff along the way. That's, I think, lifelong lessons for a child that's going to read this and, you know, shape them and watch these videos to some extent for their future. So those are the things that come to mind for me in terms of work, big impact for me.
Here you are now bringing to life some of these stories that never have been told or have been told, but the bigger audience hasn't heard them. I commend you on that. I tip my cap to you. I tip my fedora. For the listeners, Jason is wearing a very cool hat, paying homage to the Negro Leagues.
Negro Leagues All-Star cap. New Era made it. But yeah, saw this at the store over there in their flagship store in New York. And I'm like, man, what is that? I got to have it. And I realized it was Negro Leagues. And I'm like, oh, we're doing this. You know, now I got to have that. It was meant to be, right?
There we go, right? And for a lot of folks that don't know, Jason and I first met because of the great Bob Kendrick. Mr. Kendrick, thank you. Palante, shout out to Mr. Kendrick and his team, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, who are playing a gigantic role in this to bring all this together. And when we connected, it was like, I'm in. And the reason, you know, for folks that know I'm passionate about baseball, but I'm an advisor to the Eagle Foundation, Martin de Eagle. And he is featured in this game, along with other greats in the game. Those stories, like I said, are so important to be told and it's needed. You're giving this generation a chance to see and hear it play. So as they're having fun, they're learning, which I find very, very, very cool. So at this point, all this is happening, but familia, cultura, that plays an even bigger role when you're growing up. So let's take it back a little further on the influences that shaped you growing up, la familia, the gatherings. Share with me a little bit about the familia, la cultura, and growing up and those influences.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go back to what I started with, which didn't make much sense, but you asked who I was, and I started by saying human. There's baggage there, right? There's a reason for that. I'm first generation. Both parents born in Mexico. All my aunts and uncles, obviously my grandparents on both sides, all born in Mexico, near Jalisco, Guadalajara, that area. Migrated up, I don't even know the year. All I know is my parents' age. My mom was about 8 or so. My dad was in his younger teens. I ended up in the Vista, Encinitas, San Diego area. But I say human because my mom growing up was very conscious about making sure, I don't even know how to phrase it. It's not a normal life, but a life where we were looked at as individuals before anything else, as a human before anything else. So she would always make this joke when people would ask, you know, what are you? I'm a human, just like you, right? And it was intentional, right? She was very conscious about making sure we weren't stuck or pigeonholed. And you know, things in the 80s when I was young, I was born in 79, right? So I'm going through elementary school in the mid 80s. ESL, English as a second language. What she absolutely did not want is for us to be primarily Spanish speaking and get caught up in that and have a different educational track. Not that she would shy away from speaking Spanish or anything. Our culture was very much in the Mexican and Spanish culture. All my aunts and uncles, when they communicated, was in Spanish. We'd go to La Abuelita's house every Sunday. And then the other one every Saturday. You know, we bounce around, but every Sunday were my dad's grandparents. Everyone was speaking Spanish, but she was very conscious about us speaking English in the house and my parents speaking Spanish for that very reason. She didn't want us to have any more friction or speed bumps than we needed. And what she saw as our path to success, right? Which is a strong education, making sure. And you can get a lot of smart individuals on my family. On my dad's side, influences for me, I start with parents, right? My dad, very hard worker in construction, child of 8. He's got 4 brothers and 3 sisters, and all did construction in one way or another. He was the first to get his contractor's license and actually go through and take the test. He's not college educated, he took some classes at local community college, but got his high school diploma. My mom, on the other hand, she started her own business working from home, making dresses. And I don't mean dresses, I mean wedding dresses. I mean $1,000, $2,000 wedding dresses, all by hand. And she wanted to get into fashion at a really young age, but I got married young, had kids, as things go back in the day. But the things that come to mind when I think of my parents is it's kind of fearless. I look back and my dad built a bunch of our houses. He bought the house we were supposed to finish and he bought 4 acres, sold 3, built our biggest house on 1 with a view, a 3-story house. Like you look back at it, and even my son, who's 14 years old, my oldest, he's like, really, Tito did that? And he's first generation coming here, but just nothing was too big, right? And I circle back to that notion of not letting anything get too big or too small and staying balanced. That was what my dad instilled in me, is hard work and everything in moderation. Don't eat too much sweets. Don't get too crazy into this, good or bad. Stay balanced, right? And on my mom's side, she was very much into education and making sure we were taking care of business at school and at home. The funny thing about my parents is the big things, my dad would be like, we'll figure it out. Big problems, whatever they might be. Little things would get to him a little more than the big things. And it was ironic. And my mom was a little bit of the opposite. But so I would look to my parents in terms of work ethic and how they raised us to always take care of business, put things in their place. And that's always been a thing for me. When things are all set in order, that's where comfort is, right? House is done, work is done. And that's when I can rest, but not until then. Just say, I work to a fault, similar to my mom and dad, which is good. I think it's good for the soul, good for an individual. Other people that really influenced me, I have an uncle. He went to UCLA. This is my mom's slightly younger brother. Is it younger? Oh, gosh, ages, very close in age. But he went to UCLA, then went to Harvard Law School. And he's first generation also, obviously. And he wasn't an influence or a mentor in the sense of consistent conversation. He was looked at, by my view, as what he's accomplished and what he was able to do and the things he's done. He was off at school for much of my younger ages. But he also had this whole other life where he played the trumpet. And didn't just play the trumpet. My uncle doesn't do anything small. Everything is big and impact. Like when I say play trumpet, he played background with Aretha Franklin and some shows. Everything he does is big, like, right? Going to Harvard Law School and getting into music. And so I always looked to him in terms of, there's nothing I can't do. Like I didn't know it growing up necessarily, but it was this feeling of vibe of, there's nothing that can't be accomplished. And another one of my mom's brothers who was more directly in communication with me. He was more of a big brother, when I was going through my teen years, we hung out a lot. And so let me tell you my first uncle. I was talking about Jorge Arciniega. I mean, you can look him up, a lot of information on him. But then there's his younger brother, Carlos Arciniega, Luis, Charlie. He had three names, depending on what time of day and who was talking to him in the family. But he also was in music. Taught my brother how to play guitar. My brother, Jordan, badass guitarist, had a band when I'm in San Francisco and whatnot. But he was more in a day-to-day influence for me, you know, helping with computers, helped me build my first computer, just things like that. Or in terms of mentors, family was really strong for me. And then it's all about friends, you know, friends you keep close to you and friends you commiserate with. I don't even want to say look up to, but look to for constant guidance. You know, I got a best friend from junior high I still talk to, Carlos Gallegos. And we still hang out and talk to this day. And so those are probably the biggest influences that come to mind when I think about who's shaped who I am and motivated me. And I look to when I think of how would someone handle this, right? You know, in work mentors, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Chris Cutliff, who's my boss, who's basically hired and saw something in me back in 2004. And as always, we're very much cut from the same cloth, you know, in terms of work ethic, get it done, and using common sense to guide us and not letting things get too big or unsolvable. Those are the folks that come to mind.
Did you know, sabías que? On March 28, 2023, history was made in the sports gaming world with the release of MLB The Show 23. A new game mode named Storylines, a new game experience, focuses on the Negro Leagues. The San Diego studio team partnered with the families of the players, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and NLBM president Bob Kendrick to bring these stories to life in a video game. MLB The Show 23 Storyline Season 1 introduces 8 Negro League players and their stories narrated by Bob Kendrick. The legendary roster includes Leroy Satchel Paige, Jackie Robinson, Andrew Rube Foster, Hilton Smith, Hank Thompson, John Donaldson, Martin de Eagle, and John Jordan Buck O'Neill. With this multi-year partnership with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, their goals align with the museum's to educate, enlighten, and inspire by celebrating the rich history of the Negro Leagues. Purchase a copy today and tell them Giraldo sent you. Now back to the show. I can clearly see how that balanced focus you have and that determination was instilled with you. So with family, you know, there comes la música, la comida, the food, the dance, those gatherings. Share with me a little bit about that.
Every Sunday, I feel like every Sunday, it was probably more like every other Sunday, we're at my dad's mom's house, Abuelita Amparo, beautiful soul. She was about the sweetest lady you'll ever meet. I'm sure just like your grandma or grandmothers, abuelitas. We were there every Sunday. There was no plan. We were just there. We would eat. She would force you to eat. You're hungry. No, you got to eat. You're getting too skinny. Always had frijoles sitting there in the crock pot, refried beans or the pan, la olla or on the pan. Always the beans. And then stuff, tortillas and meat, whatever it might be, chicken or beef. But it wasn't like there was a plan necessarily. There was just this constant feeling of having to hang out with family, not lose that connection. And so it was more of a feeling than an event and a positive tug that you constantly had. So that was on my dad's side. On my mom's side, the bigger events were always at our house, Christmas. It speaks to my mom being kind of the matriarch of the family. Christmas, Thanksgiving were usually at my house. And in terms of music, you know, there would be some trumpet play, a little bit of guitar play here and there off in the corners. We'd always, you know, little pockets of who was interested in younger kids doing this and that. Food-wise, we did a lot of American traditional stuff at my house more so than when we were at Abuelita's. Weddings always stuck out. It seemed like if someone was always getting married. I mean, you've got a family of uncles, 12 or so, 12, 14, shoot. You've always got a cousin or someone get or an uncle getting married. And so weddings come to mind in my youth, probably from like 8 to my later teens. Felt like every year there was one. And the dancing that would happen, you know, I remember one distinctly, my cousin Tito, older cousin, and they would break out the cardboard and do quebraditas right there. And it didn't happen a lot, but it was fun. You would see those moments where my dad and my abuelita would dance and the uncles would dance around. And you saw how they would be as youth and kids and how that household might have been. It's a fond memory I have. And then hot chocolate at the house, which was, you know, call it Mexican hot chocolate, but it's just hot chocolate. Ibarra, and you'd sneak the little bricks of chocolate on your own to eat while mom's warming up the milk. But those are some of the things I remember in terms of food and culture. And then we would do the tamales around the holidays and whatnot. And they were local, which was important. Everyone was either in Vista, San Marcos, all in San Diego County, and a couple uncles coming from LA or other areas. And that was good because you got to see everyone often.
Was there a refrain, a saying that stands out? You know, you did something wrong and your mom and dad were like, mira, mijo. Or it was more of advice. Was there something that stood out that to this day you find yourself with your family saying?
It's more funny than anything. There's a couple that stick out. Híjole is always one. Híjole. It can be serious. It can be funny. It can be nonchalant. That's one that sticks out. And another one that for the longest time, and to this day, I don't even necessarily know exactly what it means. I just know how to use it. Que la fregada. I think it just kind of means, oh, shoot. Oh, darn. Something like that. But those are a couple that stick out that we use all the time. Both sides of the family. So it was kind of universal on both my mom and dad's side.
So all these things prepare you for the adversity, prepare you for things that happen in life that are the unexpected. Getting to know you a little bit, I really admired like just the diligent work ethic. I mean, you get back to me immediately. Not only that, but our conversations are always, we finish this, we're moving on to the next. And I can see that. And now having this conversation, right? Really learning about where that came from. So this prepared you for things that happen in life that sometimes happen and you're like, man, how am I going to get through this? Can you share an instance where a lot of the things that your family taught you helped you in a moment to get through?
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. One is in a specific moment. It was more a period in time. I mentioned earlier, I did everything kind of early in life. And that's because of my birthday. So I was born in November. Back then, they didn't have TK. It's basically, you're too young to get into kindergarten, but you're not quite still young enough for preschool. But back then, I was a four-year-old, right? And started kindergarten. Cried the whole first 2 weeks. And I only bring that up because it accelerated everything in my life, right? By starting kindergarten as a four-year-old, guess what? I started seventh grade, which was junior high for me, as an 11-year-old. I started high school as a 13-year-old. I started my senior year as a 16-year-old. I started college as a 17-year-old. And for me, I was always gravitating towards people of stature, people in a position of power, people who were unable to be pushed around, unable to be picked on, thinking in elementary terms. And so because of that, because I was young, and because I saw that, I've always been an observer. Who I am as a person in terms of confidence, you know, it came over time. As a younger kid, starting at 4 years old, I was a baby in myself, right? And I'd sit back and I'd observe and I'd watch and I'd read, still do that to some extent, and then find my opportunity and times to jump in and get into the mix. Never necessarily the life of the party that would jump in the middle of eight and would want the attention on me, right? So by virtue of that, I was always looking at individuals that were in that position of power, right? Usually in the peers. And so that got me in trouble come my teen years, right? Nothing scared me, which was also scary looking back. And then I gravitated towards some individuals that weren't the best. And being a Latin kid, you can imagine what that was in terms of proximity to things and what you'd see in teen years. And so I got in some trouble in high school. Frankly, was in danger of not finishing high school, not because of my grades. The irony here, and probably frustrated my parents to no extent, was I would do things and I'd be like, go look at my grades. I'm getting a 3.5. As soon as that becomes a problem, you can come talk to me. The arrogant little kid I was. And man, I am. And ironically for me, as the world turns, my son very much is the same way. Getting grades, doing it. He's like, hey, I'm taking care of you. So because of that, I was given some freedoms, right? And freedoms to do good stuff and bad stuff. And so that's the first thing that comes to mind. And I won't get into details about what exactly that meant. But yeah, high school was rocky. Mom was scared of whether I was going to finish. And how that translated into what has shaped me and be able to overcome that was, it really had to do with that work ethic. For all the stuff I would get into and the trouble I would get into, I never let grades be impacted. I never let my education really get hurt. And so while I had to go to another school for a little bit, I was always a notch above the rest of the class. meaning in terms of production and work and making sure the grades were never suffering. And so it was a really strange dichotomy with me where fearful, would be a risk taker, get into some trouble, but still do my homework at home. And I do think that work ethic in a really interesting way got me through those things, because it had both collided and me not get those grades and me getting in trouble, it would have been a whole different story for me. So that's the first.
Mi gente, when you get a chance, take it a step further after you listen. Help support Siempre Pa'lante by making a donation. This helps keep the lights on and, more importantly, brings you more cultural content and live events. Instead of buying that cafecito or fresh bagel, visit linktree.com/sp.alwaysforward. linktr.ee/sp.alwaysforward. Or go to the show notes for more info. Gracias.
And the second thing, I thought about this a little bit, was when my daughter was two, she was dealing with a health issue. We couldn't figure it out. She was always kind of colicky, always sick. This is my daughter who's six now. And we took her into urgent care. She was having trouble breathing and very congested. We took her to get x-ray and the doctor's like, you got to take her to the emergency room. They saw stuff in the x-ray that they couldn't explain. We take her to Rady's Children's Hospital, fantastic facility. And 4 years ago, about 2019, right around Super Bowl. I remember that because it was Super Bowl night. We took her to urgent care. And the doctors there come out and tell us, after sitting in emergency room, your daughter's left lung isn't working. Her heart shifted over to the middle. Her intestines are up here near where her heart should be, which is why her heart's been shifted over. And we believe what she have is, what they didn't know at the time, but what we found out through the MRI was CDH, congenital diaphragmatic hernia. She basically had a little hole in her diaphragm. Intestines came up through there. Heart shifted over. Left lung wasn't working. She had been operating with one lung. And so the congestion we were hearing and what an x-ray previously thought to be lung congestion was actually her intestines. My wife and I were beside ourselves and we're like, what does this mean? And they basically told us they had to go into surgery and hopefully it would be as simple as putting back down her intestines, sealing up the diaphragm. Ideally, the lung just starts working and the heart goes back into place. They didn't know if they needed to put a mesh to connect the diaphragm or if her tissue would work. And the scariest moment of all of it was when they went in for the MRI, they didn't know the extent of it. You know, they treated it like a normal MRI and her heart, blood pressure, everything was low coming out. She wasn't waking up. And it was the scariest 4 hours of our life. But when she went into surgery, got through it swimmingly. Didn't need new tissue, didn't need any mesh, used her own body, lung aired up, heart went in place, intestines were working fine. That was probably a few of the scariest days of our lives. In terms of house, you know, family gets you through it, talking to mom. Religion was big in my life early on at that point. To this day, religion is still, you know, not really a factor. So it was mostly family support and support of my wife, Shayla, and us dealing with it together. But I do think the strength of family and those connections and the positivity is really what lets you get through those moments.
First half, you shared about you growing up. You know, I can relate when you were talking about testing the waters. I used to do the same thing with, I'm doing good in school. And then you push the envelope, right? Keep pushing and pushing. But there comes a time where you get that cocotazo that your parents start, all right, that's it. And for me, it was my sister. My sister has been such a huge role model in my life. And my brother-in-law now, Tata, big shout out to Tata, and pretty much kept me steered. I would steer off the road and they would get over here. So I totally can relate what you were saying with that. But then on the flip side, being a father of a beautiful soon-to-be four-year-old daughter, I can't even imagine. You're right. The power of family, it got you through. And God bless, man. And I'm so happy to hear that she's doing fine. She's living a healthy life. And that's what it's about. And I think these things build you and make you stronger. And when you look back, yes, it's emotional. And I felt that. I felt as you're talking, it hit my heart. Because when you're a parent, you want to go in there and fix it. You're helpless, but that's where familia and just believing got you to this point. It's beautiful to know that things are okay and we're moving forward, and that's beautiful.
This is Jason Villa, Director of Production, MLB The Show. You're listening to Siempre Pa'lante with Giraldo.
All these things lead up to legacy, right? The term legacy is a powerful word. So what does legacy mean to you? And what is your legacy?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. Definition in my mind is, what do you want to be thought of? How do you want to be remembered? What are the stories you want to be told about you? And it's interesting because there's a lot that comes in with when you start talking about ambition. And sometimes ambition is relentless. And as an individual like myself, and I'm guessing you and others who are highly ambitious, for me, there's not always a lot of apologies. It's a tough line to toe to get where you want to be unapologetic about it, but make sure you're thought of in a way that's what you believe to be proper or just for what you want to do. But that question to me has shifted so much over the last 20 years. I thought I knew, I've always thought I knew everything, right? The irony of individuals like that are wired like myself, how I would have answered that 20 years ago is vastly different than now. I've become far more tolerant of others' differences, or more so focused on what others can do versus what they're not doing or can't do, and understanding and appreciating those differences for what they are, not only in the world, but for how they interact with you as individuals and the impact they may have on you and the stuff around you. And I only bring that up because me as a younger guy was pretty relentless in terms of my pursuit of success and not being very understanding of others' inability to keep up with me, if you will. And that's shifted over time. And I'm trying to press that upon my 14-year-old who's got these very similar thoughts that I do as a young, ambitious dude of expectations and how, well, that's fine. That's on them. I'm like, no, it's not. It's on you to tolerate too, bud. And so now for me, I hope as I'm shifting my approach to it, I do want my legacy not only to be as an ambitious individual who's been successful, who has accomplished a lot and accomplished easily, monetary comes to mind, but it's more about what we talked about in terms of things we hang our hat on and work and successes. And for me, legacy, family, children, how I've shaped them and how they're going to continue. Like for me, it was never a question of whether I would have children. It was just a matter of when and with who, obviously. And I want that legacy, my legacy to be, yeah, talk about me and talk about what I may have done. And as important as the what for me now, as I get older, it's the how. I'm trying to make sure that I've done it the right way in terms of bringing people along, pushing up others around me. I mean, from an interpersonal level and friendship, but I also mean from a work level. Like that for me has been probably the biggest shift in work, is understanding that for us to succeed, I need people behind me to get better and improve and come along with on the journey, and the people above me to continue to mentor and guide and open the doors. But then it really, for me, it means children. How have I left my children in this world and how they are going to interact and have an impact by being good individuals, by continuing to progress and be ambitious themselves in the right way. And that's the legacy I'd like to leave behind, is look to my kids and how I've raised them and what they're able to do.
Gracias, Jason, for sharing your story. It's clear that familia is the foundation for everything you do. As you pay it forward, you inspire the next generation of leaders. I'm looking forward to what's next, hermano. Te deseo lo mejor y más. Mi gente, take it a step further supporting the show. Rate, review, follow, like, subscribe, and share. It goes a long way. Remember, you can find the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check the show notes to learn more about Jason Villa. A Pa'lante shout out goes to my editor, Santiago, guests, familia, and listeners. Gracias for your support. Tune in and tell a friend. Hasta la próxima. Pa'lante.